You're listening to Wheelationships.
We're still talking about still communicating and how to address conflict in the healthiest, most God-fearing way we can. At the same time, as we're talking about conflict and confrontation, I heard the air kick on and I'm so happy because it's warm. At the same time that we're talking about conflict and confrontation, and this conversation that takes place, whenever we have a conflict, we're having it in the context of our social styles as well. It's not just good communication skills, good confrontation skills, good skills in working in a conflict, but understanding that in the midst of that, you're doing that in the context of your social style. We won't be just communicating about the conflict. We'll be communicating about a conflict with someone who has a primary social style, and we will be communicating as someone who has a primary social style. And many times those primary social styles and the secondary social styles that we have are going to be different. So you got all of these things working together at the same time. So we're going to continue the discussion about communicating about a conflict. So let me ask you this. What are the different parts of communication? Listening, verbal, nonverbal,
information.
Yeah, those are your basic, you know, basic things of communication. And I even have a little fairly simple chart to help explain the process there in front of you. In our chart, it's in color. So let's kind of walk through this. The basic thing, and this is something we talked about last week, is we have a message that we're trying to get across to the other person. There's this conflict. There's something that, and as we said last week, at the heart of our message is we want this to change. We don't like what's going on. We want it to change. So when we're communicating in the midst of a conflict, we're trying to get to that message. It's not just the words that we say, but it's the overall message. Now, the message is coming from a source. And in this instance, we're talking about us being the source, dealing with the conflict, and we are the source of the message. We are the one trying to communicate the message. And what we're communicating is what we mean. Okay, this is what I mean. But as we know, we're also taking that message to a receiver. And the receiver gets what they understand. And what I mean and what they understand may or may not be the same thing. We hope that we get what we mean and what they understand to be the same thing, because that helps a whole lot. If what they understand is different than what we mean, then we're liable to have even more conflict. So this message then goes through a channel. And the channel is a variety of things. It could be speech. We're talking. And so the message is going through the words that we say. But not only is it going through the words that we sometimes write the message because we feel we're better with words on paper. So we write a note, or we write an email, or we send a text, or we post something on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram or sign language. Also, body language. We talked about that, the nonverbal stuff, the things that we don't say, but we're saying. We're trying to give a message. So we have all of that that is the channel that we're taking this message through. Now, in order for it to get to the channel, we have some coding that we have to do. Okay. because we all say things differently. We all write things differently. We have different body languages. And so we're taking this message. Now, understand, some of this is we mean to do it. Some of it's conscious. Some of it's unconscious. And we'll talk a little bit about that. But so we have the coding that takes it into the channel, but then the receiver has their decoding that they're doing. And they're interpreting what's coming out of that channel so that they can then understand it. And hopefully there's some common code. We're all victims of the common code. No. No, we have, sometimes we code it and decode it the same, and that's where we have things in common there. All right, so, and that ends with the big picture there. Everybody understand that? That's basically, and you see this in different ways, but that's pretty much the most basic diagram of communication and how communication works. As I'm standing here, I have things that I mean. I am encoding them into body language and tone of voice and the words that I'm saying and how all of that is structured. I'm taking it through that channel, and then you're decoding it and you're interpreting that, and now you're understanding something or not. And hopefully what I mean and what you understand is the same thing. Now, when it comes to conflict, we're still doing this. So last week we talked a little bit about the channel of words that we say. And we also talked about the message itself and the fact that we craft, that if we're going to effectively deal with conflict, we're going to craft a three-part message. We're going to craft what I see you doing, what I feel about what you're doing, and what I would like to see happen. When we're in a conflict, we should work to go and say, okay, this is what I see happening, this is how I feel about it, and this is what I would like to see change. That's the simple three-part message, and if you missed that and want more explanation on that, go to the website. It's there. And all of this that we're saying, the words that we say, are in the context of our different social styles. So now, when you think about social styles, where do you think social styles would then fit in this communication? Coding and decoding. Exactly. In that coding and decoding is where our social styles come in. Because we got this message coming through, whether it's verbal or nonverbal, and our social styles are going to interpret that differently. You know, if if I'm a driver, I'm probably going to do a lot less decoding. I'm going to take it, and because drivers tend to be straightforward. This is how it is. Bam, thank you, bam. Go on. Analyticals, going to do a lot more decoding. Okay, there's going to be a lot more analysis being an analytical. So you can see in the decoding and the encoding, it's going to be different. Yeah.
I can give you a prime example of that this week.
Oh, do that.
I had to have a talk with one of my mechanics, and I thought I was a pretty gentle conversation. I just explained to him what the issues was and thought we resolved it.
And he cried, didn't he?
No, not this one. But he's talking to another one of my mechanics. Now, my mechanic is, I would put him as an amiable. He's talking to one of the other mechanics and said, man, he was really hard on me. And when I heard that, I thought to myself, hard on him? He thought I was hard on him. The last time I was hard on him, I made him cry. So, But it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm looking at it as a very easy, level-headed, just kind of explaining a problem conversation. And apparently, he took it a whole lot more than I did. So.
Absolutely. And this will come even more into play in this next part. Because not only is it the words that we say, but it's the words we don't say. What we communicate through body language and other nonverbal message, you know, and depending on your social style, that whole nonverbal thing, I think expressives can look happy even when they're not, and some other social styles can look extremely unhappy. The words we don't say is the blank. I didn't give you a blank for say. Tricky, tricky.
That was decoding incorrectly.
See? You got it? Message completely misunderstood, right?
It was a class full
of uncoding. Yeah. I didn't give you a blank for the words that we say, because we already did that last week. Clear? Not? All right. You have a blank for the words we don't say, but not the words we say. All right.
The unwritten message is we should have been here.
Yeah. There was an unsaid message of, see, you missed it. All right. The words we don't say is about body language, other nonverbal things. Here's some interesting body facts. Body language, not body facts, but body language facts. Different class. Body language facts. These are some facts that different researchers insist are true. We'll give Mary Jane a moment. Okay, I'll let you decide whether these are, you think they're true or not. Researchers tell us this. In over 2,000 videotaped conflict negotiations, never once was a conflict settled where anyone in attendance had crossed legs. Settlement was only reached when negotiators uncrossed their legs and moved towards each other. Nobody had to go to the bathroom. That's all. Studies have shown that when a teacher's voice rises in tone and the words are rapid, the classroom disruption goes up proportionately. When the teacher lowers his or her voice, speaks more slowly, and uses words carefully, negative classroom behavior decreases. Now, maybe your parents use this on you. You know, if you do that one more time. There you go. Whatever, it works. Yeah. What? People who live in the city shake hands with their elbows bent. The researchers say this. They stand about 18 inches apart. People who live in the country lean forward and shake hands with their arms fully extended, elbows locked and at a further distance apart.
Just in case they've been out with the cows. That's it.
See if you think this one is true. Wives are extremely alert to other women entering their husband's personal or intimate territory, even if the husband is not aware of the invasion the wife is. Studies indicate that a library table can be reserved by simply placing books on the table in front of the chair. This act can reserve the table for up to 70 minutes. If someone leaves a coat on the chair, the action can reserve the table up to 2 hours. Just the way we interpret. See, that's one of those things we interpret and decode. That's not even body language. It's stuff we do that communicates. All right. One of the most irritating body gestures is to point a finger at someone. The second most irritating gesture is to give them the finger. It's true. Sally, stop it. So, not giving anybody the finger. Okay. Successful people seem to initiate handshaking more than unsuccessful people. Now, I thought about that. I thought, well, you know, drivers and expresses tend to be more aggressive, and more aggressive people tend to succeed more in our society. Outgoing, extroverted. Yeah, culture has something to do with it. She said Europe, everybody shakes hands. Interesting. People who are more introverted seem to keep people at a greater conversational distance than extroverts. That would seem to make sense. When people, here's one. I'm tempting fate by saying this because I know what's going to happen. When people start yawning, they usually, just saying that just made a couple of you go. There you go. When people start yawning, they usually continue to yawn from 14 to 17 times before they stop. A study was done on two groups of students listening to a lecture. The first group was instructed to listen with arms crossed. The second group was to listen with their arms uncrossed. What do you think happened? Who retained more? Uncrossed. Yeah. The crossed arm. The cross arm group retained and learned 38% less than the uncrossed arm group. When a person is excited, his pupils will dilate up to four times his normal size. If the person is angry, his pupils will contract. When two people are talking and a third party, here's one I wanted to try out before I got to class, and I forgot about this one. When two people are talking and a third party walks over, if they point one of their toes towards the person, it indicates that the person is accepted into the group. If not, the third party will get the message and leave.
What? So non-pointing toes.
You're going to have to check that out. Chris is going, yeah, this works. Okay, all right, good.
Because you're opening
it. Yeah, you're opening it.
Do this. Whoever did this had their arms open.
So we're still on the sending side of the equation. Okay, we're still on we're the sender. We're the message giver here. When you're trying to communicate your message, remember that your wordless communication can happen voluntarily or involuntarily. You're trying to say one thing, but your body language is saying something completely different. Your toes are pointed somewhere that you didn't know they were. Or your arms are crossed and you didn't realize it, you know. We might put a scowl on our face. Now think about this. We put a scowl on our face, raise ourselves to our full height, puff out our chest, and squeak quickly and loudly. Okay, you put a scowl on your face like this. And you speak quickly and loudly. What is that communicating? Frustration, anger. Okay. Now, we may be doing that on purpose, but you might not be thinking about the signals you're sending with your posture, your facial expressions, your gestures, your speed. You may not be thinking about where your toes are pointed. See, And at that point, usually our social styles are going to take over, you know, because you're a driver, or you're expressive, and you're going quickly, and it's boom, 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 and you're not realizing that your speed is communicating something. Or you're amiable, and so your shoulders slump a little bit, and you kind of, and it looks like maybe you're not engaged, or you're not happy, or whatever, and that's not the message you're trying to send at all. Sometimes we contradict what we say by what we don't say. You ever been talking to someone and they ask why you're angry? And you didn't realize your nonverbals were saying that you were because you're not? Yeah?
I just said that. I can't. Some people think I'm mad or whatever, but it's simply because I can't see.
Yeah.
Because I'm focused on trying to figure out. And I give it this visual that I don't know I'm even giving.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you're trying to see. You got your contacts in different eyes, and you didn't know. What?
I used to work for a guy that would shake his head no when he was saying yes, and shake his head yes when he was saying no.
Oh, my word.
And when he would be speaking in front of an audience, the people would up here would hear what he had to say, but the people in the back got the opposite message.
Uh-huh.
And if you try to do that, your brain just doesn't let you do it. I don't know what he was.
Yeah. Like, I don't know if you noticed.
Yes.
Last week on 7101, Pastor Josh had a little insert we put in there, and I told him afterwards, I said, did you notice you were saying, this is the most exciting thing we're going to do? If you're really trying to send a message, it's important that you keep your entire message consistent, both verbally and non-verbally, especially when you're in the middle of conflict. Of course, God always demonstrates for us the best way to deal with conflict and how to confront properly. And we can be sure that God loves us, I mean, that's the thing. When God confronts us, you're always sure that no matter what, God loves you, even when he has to correct us. God's message is always consistent. He doesn't say one thing and mean another. God tells us he loves us. He shows us he loves us. And he tells us when we're wrong and need to change. And then he allows his own nonverbal skills to show us where we need to change. Psalm 19 is a good example of the consistency of God's communication with us. And notice the first few verses of this psalm, Psalm 19. The heavens proclaim the glory of God. The skies display his craftsmanship. Day after day, they continue to speak. Night after night, they make him known. They speak without a sound or word. Their voice is never heard, yet their message has gone throughout the earth and their words to all the world. God uses his nonverbal skills to express who he is and how he wants us to respond to him. Then in verse 7, he uses his verbal skills to actually speak. In verse 7, the instructions of the Lord are perfect, reviving the soul. The decrees of the Lord are trustworthy, making wise the simple. The commandments of the Lord are right, bringing joy to the heart. The commands of the Lord are clear, giving insight for living. Reverence for the Lord is pure, lasting forever. The laws of the Lord are true, each one is fair. They are more desirable than gold, even the finest gold. They are sweeter than honey, even honey dripping from the comb. They are a warning to your servant, a great reward for those who obey them. Now, I don't want you to leave that. Don't flip your paper over because you're going to need to look at this a second. Because if we use the example, and we should, of how God speaks to us and how he communicates with us, if we use that example in our communication with others, then there's some lessons here, okay? Look at verse 7 and circle the word perfect. The instructions of the Lord are perfect, which means they are complete, they are whole, they are entire. And it kind of reiterates what we're saying. Our message should be consistent. It should be unambiguous. It should not be vague. It should not be where we're trying to tell someone and, you know, what they, but where our body language is saying something completely different. Then underline reviving the soul. Perfect. Reviving the soul. God speaks to us with that end in mind. His instructions are perfect, and the reason is he intends to revive our soul. His instructions don't simply tell us what he thinks. They have a purpose of life. And when we're in confrontation, we should remember, when we're in conflict, we should remember that to be a primary goal. To revive the soul. Our end is not so that we can get our way. Our end is so that the relationship can move forward and be healthy. Now, circle the word trustworthy. Same verse. And we talked about this several weeks ago. We listen to God because we know that his motives can be trusted, and we know that his knowledge can be trusted. When he speaks to us, when God speaks to us, we don't have to second guess whether God knows what he's talking about. We don't have to slow down and wonder if he's really something we should listen to. And then underline making wise. Sometimes conflicts are the result of misunderstanding. We've coded and decoded poorly. What we've said and what was understood was different. And because of that understanding, we act out of what we think is true rather than what is actually true. For instance, we do something we think is helpful when actually it's the opposite of what was wanted or needed, and then you have a conflict. Probably one of the reasons Trudy doesn't like me in the yard is more than once I pulled weeds. They weren't weeds. No, they weren't. Yeah, that's a problem. And making wise the simple can help. Sometimes that's what's needed, to make wise the simple. Verse 8, circle the word right. The commandments are right. And this is where humility is very important. We should always keep in mind Micah 6, verse 8. Know, people, the Lord has told you what is good, and this is what he requires of you. Do what is right. Love mercy. Walk humbly with your God. God is right, and he doesn't ever have to worry about being wrong. We're not God. So when we go into a conflict, we should remember we're not. Okay. We think we have our view of what is right, but we shouldn't be so proud to go ahead and just say, this is, you know, I'm God. You're not. Okay. So we must constantly walk in humility with God. And only when we combine what is right with mercy and humility will produce what comes next in Psalm 19. Now, look at Mike again. It says, do what is right, love mercy, walk humbly. You have to combine all three of those things. And then you get what's next in verse 19, which is joy to the heart. Underline that, joy to the heart. Most of the time, our confrontation in the midst of conflict will not be received with joy. There may not be joy at the beginning when we express, well, this is what you're doing and this is how it causes me to feel and I would really like you to do this. That may not necessarily be met with joy. It may be met with something else. And we'll talk about that next week. But if we fail to be true, if we fail to do what is right, if we fail to be merciful, if we fail to be humble, we can almost guarantee there's not going to be joy at the end either. We're just going to make the conflict worse. So then go on to verse 8, Psalm 19, and it says, and you can circle the word clear. Remember, we talked about last week, we should be specific and we should be clear when we confront. If we are, then the rest of that verse can happen. And you can underline the phrase, insight for living. It's more than a Charles Stanley thing. You can have that. So that's kind of God's example for us in confrontation and in crafting the message and making sure that we're doing all the, those pieces right. Any questions, comments before we go forward there? All right, so we prepare ourselves, we prepare our message, we communicate the message in a clear, consistent, loving way, and the other person says, of course, you are so right. I will change and do what you want right now. Right? It always happens. No. Yeah. Okay, if that happens, then congratulations. Matthew 18:15. If another believer sins against you, go privately and point out the offense. If the other person listens and confesses it, you have won that person back. Yay, you. All right? It could happen, and sometimes it has. Especially if you meet with another. And sometimes we go into this with the assumption that the other person is a bad, no good idiot that doesn't care about anything. And that ruins the whole thing right there. That makes the conflict worse as well. Especially in a marriage relationship. Those of you that are married, you should always go in that you have someone that you have committed to and they've committed to you and they want what is good most of the time. So it may be as simple as pointing out, this is what's happening, this is the way it makes me feel, I wish you would do this instead, and many times it will. But if not, then there are some other things you're going to have to deal with. Just as God does when he tells us truth in love and we don't want to hear it. So let's talk about when we're told no. When we're told no. We ask for change. We ask for the solution we see, and we are either directly or indirectly told no. Many times it won't be directly. Many times it'll be indirectly. So what then? Well, there are some choices we can make. First one is accept the no and move on. We ask for change. It doesn't happen. We're told no. One option we have is to accept it and move on. We don't get everything we want. We shouldn't get everything we want. Now, when this is true and we need to accept the no and move on, when this is true, what's the proper emotional response? Do you know? When we ask for something and we're told no, and we know that, okay, we should move on from that, what's the proper emotional response with that? Contentment? Eventually. Acceptance? Eventually. That's not the emotion I'm looking for. Disappointment. Disappointment. Sadness. Sadness is a proper response. When you don't get what you want, being sad is okay. Now, how sad you are. I could talk about pouting for a while. It's not, you know, when we accept the no and move on, it's not a matter of cutting off the emotion and denying like it doesn't exist. We wanted something. We didn't get it. It's okay to be sad. It's not okay to lash out in anger. It's not okay to react in a lot of different ways that we could, to throw a hissy fit, fall down on the floor and stamp our feet and all. No, it's okay. It's sadness. When we don't get what we want, sadness is perfectly acceptable. Okay? Oh, brats. I really wanted that. Oh, well, let's move on. Okay? And depending on how big of a deal it is, the sadness could last this long. It might last this long. And it might last longer. I mean, that's the whole part of grief. You know, when you want a loved one to make it and they don't, sadness is perfectly acceptable. So accept the no and move on. You may be sad. That's one option. Let's see how much of this I can get in. A little bit. Second one is accept the no, but dialogue. Sometimes what you're requesting in a relationship is really important. It's really important to you. And sometimes what you really need is persistence. There are good ways to be persistent, and there are bad ways to be persistent. Sometimes giving up is not the right answer. But what's the right way? Well, familiar story there in Luke chapter 11. Suppose you went to a friend's house at midnight wanting to borrow those 3 loaves of bread. You say to him, my friend of mine has arrived for a visit and I have nothing for him to eat. And suppose he calls out from his bedroom, don't bother me, the door is locked for the night. My family and I are all in bed. I can't help you. But I tell you this, though he won't do it for friendship's sake, if you keep knocking long enough, he'll get up and give you whatever you need because of your shameless persistence. And so I tell you, keep on asking and you will receive what you ask for. Keep on seeking, you will find. Keep on knocking, and the door will be open to you. For everyone who asks, receive. Everyone who seeks, finds. And everyone who knocks, the door will be open. By the way, some of you need to combine this with Pastor's sermon this morning. Because sometimes you should accept the no, but dialogue. And one of the important parts I want to leave you with before we close is that you have to accept the no first. Okay. Many times we want a dialogue, but we haven't accepted the no. You have to understand the other person has something called free will. And a lot of times we want to take that away. But we have to respect that first and say, okay, you said no. I recognize that. I accept that you're saying no. Can we talk about this a second? And then let's go to the dialogue. And I'm going to give you several points on how to dialogue well and things that you could possibly do. We're going to do that next week. Thank you for being here today. We'll see you later.